Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Opening night, it's almost here, folks. Just days away. The highlight, of course, will be Lakers at Warriors. Two teams that generate more drama and storylines and chatter than, well, everybody else combined. It's going to be ring night, of course, in San Francisco. Draymond Green will be there to get his ring and play, to the great surprise of many people. Obviously a big topic of discussion, and no one better to discuss a ring night or the Lakers or drama than my old pal Robert Ori, who has seen his share of ring nights since he has seven of them. Rob has some very strong opinions on the Draymond situation. He's got some pretty strong thoughts on the Russell Westbrook situation as well with his old team, the Lakers. We get into all that. Plus, Rob has some pretty bold predictions on which four teams will make the conference finals this season. Before we get to all that, quick plug, Laker-related plug. Sports Illustrated and Triumph Books have a great new book commemorating the Lakers' 75 years. It's called The Greatest Show on Earth, and I was honored to write the introduction for it. It's now available for pre-order with a 30% discount. We'll tell you about that in a second. The book itself, it's a compilation of 15 stories from the pages of SI from the 60s all the way to the present. Profiles of all the Laker legends, Magic and Kareem, Kobe, Shaq, LeBron, Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, and written by some of the best sports writers ever to do it. Frank DeFord, Gary Smith, Jack McCallum, Phil Taylor, Lee Jenkins, Chris Ballard. It's a wonderful book, a great early gift to buy for the holidays too. And you can pre-order now with a 30% discount. Go to triumphbooks.com and search for Greatest Show on Earth. There's also a direct link in the summary of this podcast, or you can type in a bit.ly link, bit.ly/Lakers75. Again, bit.ly/Lakers75. When you get to checkout, use the discount code Lakers30. Again, that's Lakers30 is your discount code. Go order the book. It's wonderful. That's the end of my plug. My conversation with Robert Ori is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now very pleased to welcome back to the show, seven-time NBA champion. Never get tired of saying it, but he never gets tired of hearing it. The only person on earth who calls me Fred, which is not my name, which is okay because people call him Bob. He is still not Bob. Robert Ori, How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. How are you, man? It's good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, too. Good to see you here on just a few days from opening night. You are coming to me live from Montreal today, where you are playing NBA roving ambassador for the preseason game tonight between Celtics and who?
Raptors.
Raptors. That's it. Yeah. That makes. Yes. Oh yeah, it's Canada. How did I forget the Canadian team? Good job, Beck.
We miss Vancouver though. We miss the Grizzlies in Vancouver.
Amen and hallelujah. I know everybody's all obsessed with getting back to Seattle, which we also all miss. Those of us who have been around long enough, like you and me. But yeah, Vancouver. I would love to be back in Vancouver. Great city. Not that Toronto's not bad. And you're in Montreal, which I've still never been to. Yeah. Maybe we need an NBA expansion team in Montreal, too.
Yeah, Montreal is really nice. When I got here, it was the opening night for the Montreal hockey team. I think they played the Maple Leafs, and it was crazy busy here. The city was bananas. So when you have great fans like that, you know, that might can transcend over to basketball. But they do love basketball here, though.
They do. They do. Canada's become a very big basketball country thanks to the Raptors. And I think Vince Carter can take a lot of credit for that from back in the day.
And hey, and all the number one draft picks they've had in the NBA. So don't forget about that.
They've produced a lot of talent for sure.
Yeah.
So good job, Canada. We need more Canadian NBA cities. I want to come back up there more often. So we're going to talk opening night, your former team, the Lakers, at the Warriors for ring night. We will also get into some Lakers stuff for sure, that being your old team. And, of course, you do great work on Spectrum Sportsnet. Is that the correct title?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
They changed the name like every 2 years of the Lakers networks. It's hard to keep up.
Just, it's Spectrum. We bought out by Charterhouse. And so it's still just Spectrum. Yeah.
All right. I'll try to get that straight. So about that, though, so Tuesday night's ring night, opening night of the NBA season, ring night, Lakers at Warriors. People can watch that on TNT. As I might have mentioned, you have 7 freaking rings. That's a lot of ring nights, too. So do you have a favorite ring night memory?
I, you know what? I have a favorite and a bad one, too, because I'm going to start off with the bad, because when the Lakers decided not to sign me, I signed with San Antonio, and it was their ring night. So I'm sitting there like, this feels very awkward to sit here on the bench and watch these guys who took us out of the playoffs get their rings. And that was the most awkward and most frustrating feeling ever. So it was really, really weird. And I've never talked about it with anyone but you, but it was crazy, man. You know, think about it. You just got beat by a team that you should have beat. They ran a ring, and you sitting there watching them all happy getting your ring, and you sitting there like a little sad kid who got left out and who couldn't go play. But that was crazy. But I think the first ring night is always the best ring night, you know, in Houston in 94 and beating the Knicks and the series going 7 games. It was magical because think about it. That city as a whole had never won a championship in any of its franchises. They're not the Oilers, not the Astros. And we were the first team to bring a championship to that city. So it was magical. And that first one, it was hard. It was hard to, like, you know, emulate that feeling again, because even though when I was in LA, growing up an LA fan, you win in that championship, it's like, oh, I already been there, done that type of thing. But it, you know, all of them have great moments, but that first was always, was spectacular for me.
Does it linger for the team that won it? And maybe when you've won a bunch, maybe by the third one you won with the Lakers, maybe it's not, like, the emotions aren't as strong, but I've always wondered about, like, I don't know what the record is of the champion on ring night, what their record is in that game. I imagine the emotions are just intense that it could end up being a distraction for them. Do you recall, like, is it tough to play after you do all that and you're celebrating your last accomplishment, but now you're starting a new season?
For me, it was never tough because I've always wanted to repeat. I've always wanted to say, oh, this wasn't a fluke. Oh, we can do this thing. And in my mindset, that's how I am. And you know me, you probably never see me with my ring on, any of my rings on. And when you get your ring, you immediately give it back to whoever gave it to you. You say, all right, forget about that. Let's play. And that was my mindset. And I don't know where that came from, but that's just how I've always been. I was just like, you know what? The past is the past. You can't live off your past. You got to move forward. And for me, you put that ring down, you try to get that done, because rings are addictive. And you want to be greedy in this situation and collect as many rings as you possibly can.
And you did. So I guess that makes you very greedy.
I'm very greedy. I am very greedy, very selfish.
I hadn't actually thought about. Yeah, so it was 2003. The Spurs had won the championship that year, ending the Lakers three in a row. And yeah, that was the summer where you end up, the Lakers signed Karl Malone and Gary Payton. So they kind of just like, you know, kicked you to the curb. Never mind that you'd helped them win three straight championships and you were a key part of the whole Shaq Kobe dynasty. Never mind all that. And then you go join their one of their greatest rivals at the time, the Spurs. So you're sitting there on Spurs opening night, ring night, as the previously vanquished Laker, who's now a Spur, watching Tim Duncan and Parker and everybody get their that's awkward. That is definitely awkward. I hadn't even thought of that.
It's very awkward. And you're sitting there and everybody's all happy. Oh, look, we got another ring. And I'm sitting there like, this is bullshit.
Well, you had enough of the good ring nights to offset, more than offset. So that's so that's good. All right, we will talk about the Lakers, your former team, and all the stuff they're going through. And there's a report just before you and I logged on, ESPN reporting that Russ is going to come off the bench in their final preseason game tonight. So that'll be interesting. But before we get to the Lakers, let's talk about the other team or the team that they are visiting on ring night, because we are legally obligated to discuss Draymond Green. I mean, this is the story that's dominated the league for the last week and a half, and I feel like we're going to be talking about it for a while still, because now it's going to be, you know, because he's playing a preseason game tonight. It'll be his first since the incident. We will be, you know, scrutinizing that and all the interactions with Jordan Poole. We'll be doing it again on opening night. We'll be doing it again for weeks and maybe months to come. So let me start with the punch itself, because there's been a lot of these things happen. They just don't get out. You played 16 seasons in the NBA, Rob. Did you ever see a punch of that nature between teammates at a practice?
Never. You know, I've seen guys push and shove. And, you know, you usually just grab. And that punch to me was just, it was awful. You know, and if you start from the beginning where Draymond walks up to him and Poole, like, kind of, he doesn't even push him hard, in my opinion. And then he puts his hand out and turns away. And then Draymond, you know, just clocks him from the, and then rushes him. You know, most guys will just punch and step back, but he punches him and rushes him. And if they, and no telling how many punches would have been thrown if the people around him or that wall wasn't there to, you know, hold up Poole's fall from, well, completely going flatline. I think it'd have been a little bit, you know, nasty and you know, you really don't want to see that, man. It's just hard to talk about, because that's your teammate. Yeah. And for your teammate just sucker punch you like that, because that's what it was. It's not right in so many ways.
I don't know how to define sucker punch anymore. I always thought sucker punch was kind of like you're coming up on somebody from behind, or it's like completely unexpected. Like you've just shoved, or he's just shoved, Poole has shoved Draymond. So there is, you're already getting physical. Is it a sucker punch in that context?
Well, yes, because Poole wasn't trying to defend himself. Mm. You know, how many times have Draymond been pushed like that in a game, but even worse, but didn't throw a punch? And this is someone from another team, not your teammate. So that's why it falls into the sucker punch realm, because this is your teammate. And watch, there's so many times you go back and look at his career, people have pushed Draymond, did things more egregious, and he doesn't do anything. But this is your teammate, so that's why it's a sucker punch.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. I just wasn't, you know, the definitions there are a little hazy to me. So,
yeah. But, you know, the definition would be different for you, for that guy, and that guy. So, you know, that's my definition, because I've seen him get pushed, you know?
Yeah. So, and, I mean, in the wake of this, and I think it was before the video leaked, Steve Kerr, you know, kind of downplayed it just by saying, look, I've been in the NBA or around the NBA for a long time as a player and coach. I've seen more than 20 fist fights of some sort. But it sounds like, and look, I mean, Steve himself got punched by Michael Jordan in what I understand was a fairly similar way. So certainly his baseline comparison point might be different than anybody else's, right? And everybody's got their own experience. But you're saying in 16 years you've never seen anything like it. So that's pretty serious. That's, I mean, we rarely even see that in NBA games anymore, much less between teammates.
But you know what's weird? Sorry to interrupt you.
No,
it's like when you're winning, you usually don't have issues where people want to punch each other because everybody's happy. And that's the odd part about that. They were coming off a championship. And so for you to punch someone, now think about it. I threw a towel in Danny Ainge's face. We sucked at the Suns. We didn't practice every day about the fight in the Suns because they didn't practice hard. They didn't know the way to the path to a championship because they didn't have that pedigree. They thought it was a freaking, you know, and it was a certain way that Sam Cassell, myself, Mark Bryan, and Chucky was used to practicing. These guys wouldn't like that. So it was almost fights every day because they didn't practice hard. And so when you have this situation where you're coming off a championship, you should be happy season's coming in because you're getting ready to repeat. There should be no animosity like that in practice. And so that leads to, you know, there has to be something deeper, something underlying the situation for him to haul off and hit him like that.
Yeah. What was the worst you've seen? If you haven't seen a punch of that nature, like there was the infamous Shaq versus Kobe dust up in a practice in the offseason in 1998 that Olden Polonese broke up, or at least Olden Polonese said he broke up. Well, Olden Polonese, Olden's got a lot of stories, but he says he broke it up and kept Shaq from doing more damage there. Were you there for that one, Rob? Or if not that one, then what's the biggest thing you've seen in practice?
I was there. The only one that really got out of hand for us was when Vernon and Carl Herrera got into a fight in the weight room.
Vernon Maxwell and
Carl Herrera.
Oh, Carl Herrera. Okay.
Right, when I was with the Rockets.
Yeah.
And they were in the weight room throwing weights at each other. And they came out and said, hey, they fighting, come break it up. And we're like, they throwing weights. Fuck that. We ain't going in there. Excuse my language. But, you know, it was one of those situations where they were throwing weights at each other. And that didn't really happen. And then they got into another fight where they punched each other in the arms and the chest, but not in the face, and just grabbed each other. But other than that, you know, and people always – I always laugh and say people when Shaq and Kobe got into fights in practice. And I was there for 7 years, and I don't ever remember in a fight that he got into practice. There was a lot of trash talking, and that's everybody talked trash in practice. I never saw a fight in the locker room or, you know, on the court. And it's amazing to me how these stories come out. And I always ask myself, was I there? Where was I? And it confuses me when people who weren't on the team said this happened. I'm like, damn, I was on the team in 2000, 2001. I don't remember a fight. So I don't remember any other fights in my career, especially not in San Antonio.
Shaq and Kobe at least probably gotten a little, like, you know, scuffles, like little shoving matches or something probably, right? Like there must have been, like, little things. No?
No. Mm-mm. The maddest I ever seen Shaq in practice was when Mark Madsen kept fouling him and Phil wouldn't call a foul. And that was the only time, you know. Think about it. I've seen Shaq fight three other people on the court, and I've seen him slap Ostertag, but I never seen him put hands on a teammate.
The Ostertag slap. That was my first season covering you guys. And that happened in the shoot-around in the morning, so I don't think any of us in the media saw it. It was just like the words just spread immediately. So,
yeah.
Leveled him, from what I recall.
Mm-hmm.
That was the story anyway. Should Draymond have been suspended?
You know, yes. I think he should have been suspended. This is why you'd be suspended, because think about this. If you're in an NBA game and you punch someone, you get suspended, right? And now, and also you have to think about this. When Draymond brought this up himself, ring night is probably one of the best nights in basketball. Now, when you have ring night, your family comes in. You don't know who's in Poole's family. He got some, you know, some knuckleheads or some people who want revenge. They might be plotting. And now you got Draymond who said this. His mom already said something that, oh, that wasn't a bad thing. Now you got more animosity building up. And so they should suspend Draymond, for one, for punching him, because you don't punch a teammate. And because ring night is a way to teach you a lesson, because we can't go through a season with your antics, because you are already on tilt now, because there's something else going to come out. We've seen you, you know, kick someone in the groin. We've seen you do all these dirty antics. Now you think you can get away with it. Now this is the perfect punishment. And I've always liked the the Warriors organization. You know, I'm good friends with Ritter over there. But this is so wrong in so many ways that they should suspend him for that game, because this is the most important thing in a franchise's history, ring night. What's a better way to teach someone a lesson? Make him miss that moment.
I get that, Rob. And I think there's obviously merit to that, and that is the standard approach to something like this, right? Like, this may be the first time in NBA history, or at least modern NBA history, and during yours and my memory of the league, that something this egregious has happened where the only punishment, at least that we know of, is a fine, and we don't know the amount of the fine. But, and I wrote this the other day, and I'm sure you will disagree based on what you've just said, but this is the way, this is the way I looked at it. So the Warriors know Draymond better than anybody. They obviously know their team better than anybody, too. They know how Jordan Poole feels right now and how he's dealing with it. They know how Steph feels. They know how Klay feels. They know what their culture is about and what their dynamics are about. And they also know what's at stake, which is their core group is getting older. They're trying to repeat. They're trying to add a fifth championship. They're trying to catch Robert Horry for the number of rings. and so if the calculus there is, we suspend Draymond for 8 games, 10 games, whatever.
I said just one. I'm not saying 8, just one.
Or, okay, all right, so maybe just one. What does that do to our team dynamics? Does that exacerbate the tensions we're already feeling because now Draymond feels put out and separate from the team? Or is the best way forward, especially considering we're trying to win another championship, to bring him back into the fold as soon as possible? And by the way, Jordan Poole, according to Steve Kerr, has already spoken with Draymond, and Jordan Poole has kind of consented to this approach, and Steph has consented to this approach. If everybody's on the same page internally, you're already looking at me funny. If everybody's on the same page internally, doesn't it make sense that, look, we have decided as a group, we would rather have him back in the fold, deal with it in our own way, rather than do the obvious suspension thing?
I understand what you're saying, but let me put this scenario out there. First, but that's going to come in a minute. Now, okay. Who cares what, you know, Steph says or Klay says? This is all about what Poole thinks, because he was the one that was clocked. You know,
yes,
they sit down on the outside looking in. It's how he's going to react. So who cares what those other people say? So now back to the scenario. What if that's Steph that he punches? The whole dynamics change. Why? Because A, it's Steph. He's an elite player in this league. He is the face of the franchise. He's almost the face of the league. Now everybody else gets involved because it's Steph. And in this day and age, it's like, and it comes in the sport world, I know there's certain people who matter more than others. But when it comes to a situation like this, nobody should matter more than another person. So now if this is Steph, the whole world is in the uproar. They should suspend him for the season. These are things that will come out of my mouth because they don't value Poole as much as they value Steph. So therefore, he don't get the crown. The punishment, I should say.
All right. I get that, and I think it's a really interesting analogy because, yes, immediately the image you conjure in your head is, man, you even touch Steph, you're done, right? Like, we're just waving your ass at that point, right? okay, so fair, but, I mean, I agree with the first thing you said, which is that the only person who matters in all this, in how they decide how to move forward, is Jordan Poole. Everything that we're hearing, and Poole hasn't spoken yet, they're kind of giving him as much time as necessary before. And he was never all that comfortable speaking in those media press conferences anyway. Like he's good with the media, but he's not, it's kind of like not something he's his favorite thing to do. So they're giving Jordan Poole some time, but Jordan Poole, they're not bringing Draymond back this quickly if Jordan Poole has not signed off. So if the victim of the incident, if we want to use that terminology, is okay with it, then doesn't that indicate that, okay, this is the way to go? If Jordan Poole said, listen, I can't see that guy, I can't work with that guy, I can't, then it's a different set of circumstances. I think the implication here is that Jordan Poole has kind of said, no, we're good, we're okay.
Yeah, I think there's something else, because it's like all of a sudden, oh, Jordan Poole's getting his extension. You know what I mean? So think about that.
He was going to get it anyway.
I know that, but
maybe
it's
he got an extra $10 million for his troubles. Is that what you're telling me?
Exactly, and that's my whole point. You know, $10 million reasons to make you like, oh, them come back in. You know what I mean? So it is really weird that as soon as this happened, I know they said they was going to give his extension, but all of a sudden this happened. Oh, I got my extension.
All right, we now have the contract conspiracy theory layered on top of this. I love it.
I'm on a personal note, you know. If I'm Poole, could I play with Draymond again? No, I couldn't.
Really? That was going to be my next question, is what this does mm-hmm. to chemistry and trust and all those things that really matter to a team winning at the highest level.
Because you think about this, you're never going to forget about every arena you go on. Everybody's going to be behind the bench saying, Pooh, how you and Draymond doing? Y'all going to dinner tonight? He's in every road game. He's going to get it. Even if he might get it at home, because who knows who's going to sit behind, who's going to walk by the bench. Yo, Pooh, how's your jaw feeling? Yo, Draymond, is your hand broken? You know, it's so many things. So he's never going to forget about it. And this is the one thing that's going to stick with him the rest of his career. So that, to me, is why Draymond should be suspended. That's me why, you know, there should be some kind of compensation for me getting jaw jacked.
Does this make it that much harder for them to repeat as champions? And not just the dynamics between Poole and Draymond, but the whole team and Draymond. Like, how long does it take to get over or reform those bonds, and can they?
Well, you know, let's be real. It's hard to repeat. And if you look at their team, they're up in age. And Draymond didn't perform well at all last year. If it wasn't for Steph having an incredible, you know, postseason, we wouldn't be talking about them, you know, repeating. And I think it's hard to have that repeat performance that you had in that postseason. And, you know, it all is going to depend on if Klay can stay healthy. Yeah. And Draymond can stay healthy, because if you watch Poole is right there on the cusp of being one of the most dynamic players on the team. But you're going to have this luminous dark cloud looming over you, so it's always going to be that moment where you don't know where Poole's going to click or Draymond's going to click and something else is going to happen.
Yeah, no, you're right, and that's the thing. It's this delicate thing, right?
Yes, very.
Winning a championship, you need some luck along the way. You need good injury luck. You need good team dynamics. Phil Jackson had that phrase he used to use where things turn on a trifle. I never quite mm-hmm. understood what that meant, but I understood what it meant. It's a funny phrase. But the idea was the smallest little thing sometimes changes the course of a game, a mm-hmm. season, a championship run, yeah. I got to think this one's tough to get through. Rob, just thinking about all of this, it actually did remind me of in the years that I was covering you guys, you get to know players in two different circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's different on the court than off, right? I know you off the court. Nice guy, good guy that people would love to hang out with. But if you saw Robert Horry throw the towel at Danny Ainge, and you alluded to that earlier, or you saw Robert Horry hip check Steve Nash into the boards in the playoffs, you'd think, oh man, that guy, he's a bad dude or whatever. Or the other person I thought of actually was your teammate, Rick Fox. Rick, really bright guy, thoughtful person, great dude off the court. Rick was a maniac sometimes on the court and probably got involved in more in-game fights, dust-ups, snarling, bullshit, all this stuff than anybody. And I remember Rick once told, I think it was Scott Howard Cooper from the LA Times, and in a story that he wrote, Rick once told him something about like, I don't get mad, I just snap or something like that. And the idea was that whatever else Rick Fox is as a person on the court, sometimes something just snaps. And that's what I thought about with Draymond. Like Draymond, smart guy, good guy, thoughtful person. All these other wonderful things off the court. I've talked to him many times. He's very likable. But on the court, sometimes Draymond snaps. And this is a case where it happened in practice. So I'm just curious, like, is that, you know, you've had a lot of teammates. You were teammates with Vernon Maxwell, who people can go Google Vernon Maxwell if they don't know his history as a player too. But like that dichotomy, like that it's not who you are on the court is not who you are in life. But sometimes who you are on the court is not a people, not a person that people would approve of.
Yeah, you even mentioned a guy like Rasheed Wallace.
Sure,
I know people know one of the nicest freaking guys off the court you ever meet. And I think Isaiah, I don't remember the quote exactly. Isaiah, I remember hearing him say, "If you're gonna judge me by me bouncing the ball and shooting the ball and playing a silly little game about who I am off the court, you know, you're an idiot." And I think people look at the idiot box, which is the TV, and judge people by what they see on TV. And I had a lot of guys that, you know, you come to practice someday, you're looking at the person like there's something wrong. People forget that when you're at home, you know, like for my situations, I remember I would snap every day. It's when my daughter was really sick and nobody knew this because I ain't tell nobody. And so this was my outlet to let go of some of that frustration that was going on. I remember when my daughter was in really sick and I cussed Tim Duncan out in practice. And it was just certain things that you think this is a physical sport. And in that physicality, things come out. And that's the way to exert that energy, let some of that frustration out. You know, you think about it, you try to dunk on somebody really hard, that's letting that frustration out because you don't want to punch someone because these are your teammates. And I've had a lot of guys where, you know, they come in, you can tell, oh, something's happening at home. He's arguing with his wife. You know, his kid is sick. And I think a lot of people forget that basketball players, or athletes in general, are human and they have emotions. And we're told to like hold these emotions in because, you know, we're idols. You know, people look up to us and you get in trouble if you let those emotions out. And that's pretty much everybody. And I think, but when you're doing something with some physicality, you, instead of bumping at a 10%, you bump at a 90%, which causes the other person like, man, what the hell's going on? So those are things that, you know, you have to look at. And there's a lot of players like that. There's a lot of players who can control it. You know, you look at the frustration Fish had in Utah when his when his child was sick. He just wanted out of the organization, wanted to go home. And so I think people, like I said, forget that there's a human nature factor and that nobody is this, you know, this stone wall who can just move through life without any emotions.
Yeah. And that you don't shut it off just because you showed up to work. Like, just people bring stuff to the office in everyday life all the time. I'm really glad you brought that up, actually, Rob, because, you know, Draymond said he spoke to the media for 40 minutes last Saturday, which, again, like I admire the way the Warriors have handled this. They've been as upfront as they possibly can be. And everybody's been, you know, speaking to the media and being accountable, whether it's Bob Myers or Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, Draymond. They all spoke about this as soon as they could to meet this head on. Doesn't negate anything that happened, but I appreciate the accountability. But Draymond said, yeah, I've got some stuff going on, and it doesn't excuse anything. But he was at least trying to give us some insight into why he might not have been in his best frame of mind. And, you know, there's a context to these things. There's a context to everybody's career and every incident like this. Good chance there's something else going on. So, like, something I try to remind myself and I remind people after covering this league a long time. You know, first of all, as in life, no one should be defined by their worst moment, for the most part. But people never forget, and I get that. And who you are on the court is not necessarily who you are in real life. Basketball is the game and it's your profession and you guys played at a very high level and there are stakes involved. But it's not reflective necessarily of who you are. People get very judgmental at times like this and it kind of grates on me a bit. Last thing on this, last quick thought. So we mentioned two of your moments of villainy in the NBA. the hip check to Steve Nash and the towel with Ainge. I think those are the two highlights, lowlights, right? I don't know if there was any other moments where you had to deal with being the villain. I guess other than being a Spur coming back and having to play against the Lakers, but that was the Lakers' choice, not yours. So, but
they actually cheered me, so I was happy about that.
Yeah, as they should. Okay, so what's it like being the villain, and how long does that follow you, and how tough is that? Like, because you think of yourself, like, oh, I'm a good guy. I'm like, I threw a towel at the coach, but as you've said many times, you didn't like Danny Ainge when he was a player, much less as your coach. And the hip check to Nash, I don't know what that was about. But I mean, you weren't trying to be the villain in those moments. These are things that happen in a heat of a game in a snap second. But you have to deal now with people thinking of you in a certain way. And Draymond, of course, has been dealing with that most of his career. So I'm just curious about like the psychology of like, okay, this is how I'm going to be viewed and what people are going to say about me for a while.
But, you know, for me, that just applies to Phoenix. Phoenix doesn't like me, you know, because Steve Nash with the Phoenix Suns, Danny Ainge with the Phoenix Suns. So it's localized. So everybody else in the world.
You're just not welcome in the state of Arizona, I guess.
You're just not welcome in Phoenix. And the thing about it is, you know, you welcome that. When you go to Phoenix, they boo you. I could care less. You know, you booing me or you booing the Lakers or you booing the Spurs. I could give two farts about it, you know. And the thing about being a villain, when you hit as many big shots as me, you're going to be a villain in other places. But those are respect villains. And when you respect the villain, you don't really care. But I think about Kobe and in New York. You think about Ice Trey in New York. They're villains there. MJ in New York. But it's a respected villain. They boo you because they know you gave them numbers and it's sort of respecting. In my case, in Phoenix, they boo you because they just flat out think you did the organization wrong. And the hip check on Steve Nash was, it was, you know how coaches sometimes take texts and because they don't get calls, that was me showing the refs, oh, you want to call all these cheap fouls for the guy who won MVP, who shouldn't have won MVP? I'm going to show you what's going to happen here. So that's why I body checked him. You know, Danny Ainge was just a situation where lies. He was lying to me about playing time in certain situations. And then from him telling me he hit Mario in the face with the ball on purpose. So all that was like a boiling up thing for me with the Danny Ainge. So I couldn't hit him with my fist, so I hit him with a towel.
I looked up both of these. You got 2-game suspensions for each of those. So that the interesting again, just when, and it, you know, different time, different context, different everything, but Draymond, obviously no suspension and you got the 2-game suspension for throwing a towel at your coach. So,
but I made my money. It's interesting. I made my money back for the one with, the suspension by his actual sons. And so, because when I got traded to the Lakers had, we had played, 2 more games than the Lakers. So technically I got my money back.
That's funny. I hadn't even, I had, but count on you to have done the math there. That's phenomenal. All right, let's talk about your Lakers, the current Lakers, for a bit here. So as I said, I don't know if you had gotten wind of this, but yeah, before we started recording, reports by ESPN, Dave McMenamin does a great job covering the Lakers there, says Russ is going to come off the bench. I don't know if this is a 1-game experiment just to see how it looks and how it feels, if this is a precursor to what might happen maybe on opening night, or just kind of like maybe get things, you know, kind of set up in case they need to do it later in the season. What do you think of Russ coming off the bench, what that might mean, and is, you know, should, is that the right move anyway? Maybe he should just be playing off the bench at this stage.
You know, you can look at Russ as a Manu Ginobili. You know, think about the energy. Everybody knows Manu should have been starting. He should have been starting, but he provided a certain energy off that bench that a team needed. And I hope Russ look at this situation, if it does happen, as not a demotion, as something that can help the team be better. You know, think about it. You know, even when I came off the bench, I could give 2 craps about starting. I just wanted to be in the fourth quarter because that's when it mattered. And so if this does happen, it'd be good for the team. But it might be doing it because Schroeder is coming back. Mm. You know, Schroeder, I don't know if you watched him in the EuroLeague this summer. He was killing. Yeah. He played very well. And he played very well alongside LeBron and AD when he was in a Laker uniform. You think about it. He had great numbers, and he was just foolish not to sign that extension. And so I think that might be what they're looking at because there's a better chemistry there. And now when Russ comes in the game, he can be that guy as he was in Washington where he can just push the ball, do what he wanted to do, and do those type of things. So I think as a whole, everybody in this situation needs to say what's best for the individual and what's best for the team. And for me, if I'm Ham, I would really, really explore this because the connection Schroeder had with those other two in that team and what the energy – an effort that Russ could provide off the bench.
I totally see all that, Rob, and it makes sense to me. Also, they've just frankly got a glut of guards between Russ and Pat Beverly and Kendrick Nunn and Schroeder, Austin Reeves, and besides that, LeBron James is basically the point guard of every team he's ever on anyway. So there's a lot of guys who kind of want the ball in their hands, and you got to figure out the timing here and the minutes distribution, all that stuff. It's interesting, though. So, all right, you were – you know, a high-level role player, let's say, throughout your career, starter or bench or whatever else. And yes, as you say, you were always going to be in there in the fourth quarter. I would say easier on some level for you to take a step back and say play off the bench than Russ at this stage, a guy who's been an MVP, or, you know, when Paul Pierce was aging out, right, and the Celtics trade him to the Nets. Now he's a role guy. Then he goes to Washington. I can't remember if he started there. And eventually Doc brings him off the bench, I think, in L.A. when he's with the Clippers. I think of Vince Carter and the transition he made. Some guys can make, at that level, the all-stars, make the transition gracefully. And some are like, you just can never let go, right?
Like Allen Iverson, who couldn't make
Iverson.
Yeah. And I'm hoping Russ doesn't be in, obviously, if he comes in that, because he's still a good player. You know, he's still on the cusp of still being a great player. He's still able to do a lot of things that, you know, 90% of the league can't do. You know, and I think and he can't have that mindset as, oh, I'm a starter. You're a basketball player.
Yeah.
Period.
I've said it since he got there, because the Rush trade to me was problematic. I'm not sure he's the best fit. I still think there's a strong possibility they end up trading him at some point during the season. I don't know your thoughts on that aspect of it. But if you're going to maximize his abilities while he's there, it does make sense to me to not have him overlap as much with LeBron, because Russ is incredibly dangerous still with the ball in his hands, and it's hard for him to play off the ball, and you don't want to take the ball out of LeBron's hands.
You know, I it's funny. You and I think alike. I love Russ as a player, but when you think of a team, it's a pie. And I just didn't think that piece of the pie fit. You love Russ as a player because Russ is a guy who's ball dominant. You know, then you look over at LeBron, is ball dominant. So, you know, you love the fact that you have a third star, but it doesn't fit. You know, everybody said, well, everybody has three stars, you know, in Miami. Yeah, but D-Wade can play off the ball. You know, speaking of guards, you know, and then you go to the big three in Boston. None of them really handled the ball because of Rondo was the facilitator. He put them all in the right position to be successful. And it's so many guys around the league that say, oh, it's a big three, you should automatically win. No, it has to be a perfect fit. It can't be rubbed up against the guy. It can't be a circle and a square peg. It has to fit. And the Russ thing to me, I love Russ as a player. I wanted him on the Lakers before we got LeBron. But then we got LeBron, like, it doesn't fit, you know. And I still wonder about that situation also.
Yeah, not all big threes are created equally, and not all fit as well. I'll be very curious to see how the big three in my backyard here in Brooklyn ends up panning out this season. The other thing I've been kicking around, because Anthony Davis addressed this a couple days ago, just about whether or not he'd be playing more center. He's obviously their best center. Now, it doesn't mean you necessarily have to play him there all the time, but if we're talking about maximizing the Lakers' rotation, maximizing what they have, they obviously don't have great depth. You're trying to get this team back in the mix again. I don't know if it's even possible this season, and the West has gotten really good. But do you see it that way also, Rob? Is Anthony Davis at center in addition to Russ off the bench? Are those moves that you make to try to squeeze a little more out of this group?
You know, I don't think people understand there are no more positions in basketball. They're just slots.
Fair.
Because, you know, even though I didn't want to play power forward when I first started out with the Rockets, I ended up doing it, and look what happened. You know, small ball was invented. And you look at AD, it's like you play – if you look around the league, and let's just start in the West, because that's where the majority is gaming. What center – in the West should fear him. He should fear nobody, not Jokic, not the Stifle Tower. There's nobody. So you have there's nobody in the West that can guard you. Yeah. So even at the power forward or the center position, you want to play the center because now they got to put a smaller person in the game. You get more offensive. It's so many different things that can come into play if he plays that position. And think about it. He's outside shooting threes and on the perimeter anyway. It doesn't matter who's guarding. Your role never changes. You know how back in the day, take the triangle, for instance. Oh, you're going to move to center. Now you go from block to block. It's not like you're on the perimeter where you're in the 4-3-2 spot. You're on block. There's no more position like that. Every team runs the same plays. They do a dribble weave outside the three to try to set up a three. They got guys coming off picks for threes. It doesn't matter what your position is. Just get on the court and play.
Yeah. So Anthony Davis should be a little bit more open to this change of position that's not really that big of a change.
You know what they should do? They should label him as the power forward and label LeBron as the center. Now you're not the center now. There's no problem. I think it's the label that makes him mad. No, okay, you want to show your versatility? Okay, you're going to be the three. Matter of fact, we're going to label you as the small forward. Does that make you feel even better?
There you go. All right, so how about this? Was Tim Duncan a center or a power forward? Not that it matters.
He was a center. He was a center that got pushed over to power forward because he had a center that was a true, true center. And think about it.
Once you're talking Dave about Rasho Nesterovic, right?
No, I'm talking about David Robinson. Rasho would just sit the game when we needed a big body. But then you think about it. At the end of the game, where is Tim? He's at the five.
Yeah.
Where's someone else at the 4, 3, and 2? Even, you know, it's just, you know, it was a way to be, you got to think of it. When Tim played, there were more centers, true centers in the league. Yes. So therefore, you know, it's different. There are no true centers. Right now, there's probably three true centers in the league.
Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy Gobert.
Uh-huh.
Who would be the third? JaVale McGee.
No, but I'm saying,
at a high level, you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, and you really don't even want to call Jokic a center. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know. Well, yeah. I was avoiding Jokic because of the way he plays, right? Like, Jokic is basically a guard.
Yeah.
He's a Jokic. I mean, and this is why we probably should just eliminate positions from our vocabulary and from ballots and everything else.
True.
But I've said this. My little bit of pushback on that is, like, we're not really in a positionless era. We're in a positionally fluid era, right? Where there are still positions. Like, Embiid is not. You're never going to confuse him with being a point guard, a shooting guard, a small forward, or even a power forward. Embiid's a center. Jokic, you could say based on his skill set compared to traditional skill sets at other positions that he's not playing like a center, right? Okay, I get that one. But there's only one Jokic. And there's, you know, obviously Giannis is a freak of nature. He's the Greek freak. There are a lot of guys who defy positional definitions, but I think the majority of the league actually still mostly fits into a position. So I think we're positionally fluid, not so much positionless entirely.
The other center I was really talking about was Miles Turner, because he's the only other center, you know, that's in there blocking shots and stuff like that. But
future, you know, Laker Miles Turner.
Yeah. Hey, you would seem like AD is probably fighting for that, since he doesn't want to play center. Like, bring Miles Turner in here. He's a true center, not me.
But you could also, I mean, the beauty of that pairing would be both those guys can step out. And actually, Miles Turner is a very capable three-point shooter, better three-point shooter than Anthony Davis is. And you have a lot of defense, a lot of shot blocking, a lot of length. So, we'll see if that one ever gets done. Let me finish on this note with the Lakers. They didn't make any dramatic offseason moves. But they did hire a new coach in Darvin Ham. You played against Darvin Ham for a bunch of your years in the league. Impressions of him as a coach, but also anything you remember about Darvin as a player? Do you guys ever get into it with each other on the court? Any Darvin Ham impressions?
You know, Darvin Ham has been a guy I've been knowing since Texas Tech. He used to work out with us in Houston. He was always in the gym trying to get better and had a thirst for knowledge, always willing to listen and learn. And I think that's what he's always done also as a coach. He listened and learned. And I you know, when everybody was talking about, you know, the Lakers having a new coach, Darvin Ham and Sam Cassell were my first two choices, because they played and they've been on the benches for a long time. You know, I didn't want, no disrespect to Steve Nash, I didn't want someone like a Steve Nash to come in a situation who has no experience, you know, because you look at what, you know, they said about him when he first got there, he really ain't a coach anyway, you know what I mean? So you wanted someone with a voice. And you think about it, Darvin Ham has a great voice. He's one of those guys, let's be honest, there's a lot of guys, like, you know, let's take Dale Harris, for instance, when Nick Van Exel cusses him out. You ain't cussing Darvin Ham out. You know, you might get Draymond if you cuss Darvin Ham out. And so you got to look at situations like that where coaches, I think, this day and age, they have to command an audience, meaning command the locker room. Because these guys are built different now. You know, they look at you like, what have you done in the league? What kind of information you can tell me and provide for me? And I think Darvin Ham has won the championship as a coach, has won the championship as a player, so he has that respect. Think about when Phil came to the Lakers. You were there. The whole dynamics of this, you know, it changed. You know, Shaq perked up, Kobe perked up, because he was, even though, you know, Phil's on a different level than Darvin, he coached Michael Jordan. He won championships. So he had that respect factor. But I'm thinking still, though, these guys, they know Darvin. They know the grind he's done to get to where he is. And so I think that respect comes in. And when that respect comes in, that voice comes in, and then they start to perk up and listen. Because I think that's all the Lakers really need, is that voice to make them listen and go down that right path.
A lot of shots fired at Steve Nash in the course of this podcast. You took away one of his MVPs. You justified why it was right to hip check him into the boards and break his nose or whatever, give him a bloody nose. Now you're like trying to take his coaching job away.
See, that's the problem. Everybody thinks I bloody and broke his nose. That was him headbutting Tony Parker. That had nothing to
That was a different play.
Yeah. And it goes back to if you go back and watch that game, let me ask you this. If someone's bleeding, are they allowed to be in the game?
No.
Steve Nash was still allowed to be in the game. So that's why I hip checked him, because they gave him too much credit. They allowed him to do things that no other player could do. I love Steve Nash. Steve Nash was my great rookie. Dude. But let's be honest, there's certain things that you know he should have won that MVP. You know Kobe should have won that MVP.
I was not voting that year because I was working for the New York Times, so I plead the fifth. I was not allowed to vote during all of my years at the New York Times, so I did not vote on that one. I did not even think about that one. I don't know how I would have voted. Can't blame me.
And you know he shouldn't be. Think about it. You need someone, you know, if you're going to coach KD and Kyrie, you can't bring a guy in here who's never coached before that those guys are looking at, dude, I played against you. It's sort of like me and the Steve Nash thing. I mean, Danny, I got no respect for you. I played against you. I killed you. What the heck I'm respect you for in your knowledge? So those are the things you got to look at. I love Steve Nash. It's not any shots fired at Steve Nash. These are all truths and facts.
I mean, listen, you should get credit for helping usher Danny Ainge away from the bench into a front office role where he has very much thrived. He clearly should have just been a GM from the get-go. Maybe Steve Nash needs to go work as GM instead. Now, and listen, I'm with you. Like, Nash, you and I both know, really smart about the game, great guy, and probably could become a great head coach, but maybe this was not the right team at the right time, given just the massive personalities and the eccentricities of some of those personalities. I'm being kind today. Not the easiest way to start your coaching career, and I'll be curious to see how that goes, too. You want to make any predictions before we go here? How about Eastern Conference and Western Conference finals? I won't even make you do the finals, but who's two teams for the East and two teams for the West?
For the East, I think, of course, Milwaukee. And for some odd reason, I'm thinking Miami.
Really?
Because a lot of people count Miami out. Yeah. And I think Miami has a – because you got to think about it. Tyler Hero is getting better and better. He's so young when he got into the league. He should be still in college. He's getting better. You know, Jimmy Buckets is amazing. Bam is one of those guys who can guard anybody on the court. And he feels disrespected because he's never got, you know, top for, like, defensive player of the year. So Miami's been not being talked about. We're still talking about the Celtics getting back. We're talking about, you know, Brooklyn. And we're talking about, you know, the new dynamics of Philly and, you know, James being there for a whole year. But I still think the Miami Heat has a situation where they can get back to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Fair. Yeah, I mean, we perennially underrate the Heat, and they don't have the kind of firepower offensively that some of the teams have. But, yeah, they're tough as hell. You know they're going to bring it defensively. Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the league. Never underestimate Jimmy Butler. And you're right, like Bam just keeps getting better too. So I'm there. What about in the West?
In the West, I think it's just going to boil down to – I think Phoenix is going to be back there. I know everybody's we haven't even talked about Phoenix. You know, they had a really bad hiccup. You know, there are always certain teams that just can, you know, beat you. And think about the way Doncic did them. He just beat them. And I think they're the best team. And then Memphis. We're not talking about Memphis. I seen when they had Memphis ranked like 4 or 5. You know, Memphis is a really, really good team. And everybody's going to say, well, what about Golden State? I just think Golden State was in the perfect position. They matched up well with the teams. And they didn't have to face, you know, they faced Memphis, which is a young, dumb team. That's why they was able to beat them. So I think Memphis has grown and they're smarter now. So I think it's going to be Memphis and Phoenix. And everybody's going to look at me like I'm crazy. But Ja Morant is not being talked about MVP. So he's going to be pissed. If he can stay healthy, that team is going to be good. Because think about it. They got some dogs over there that we don't talk about.
There's two teams in the West that you did not mention. The Nuggets, who everybody expects to surge.
I can't say the Clippers, man. I can't root for the Clippers. You know better than that.
That's what I was.
Clippers.
I was leading right there. This clearly your Laker bias against the Clippers. You cannot possibly give them credit because they're one of those early favorites too because of Kawhi coming back. They got amazing depth. They got John Wall now. I mean, they definitely should be in that mix somehow.
They probably going to end up with the best record in basketball because they have the deepest bench. You know, I don't know if this doesn't, like, you know, look at the way Zion's body. You talk about the way Zion's body look now, but we ain't talking about how Kawhi's body look now. It looked just like Zion's body. So, you know, I mean, they've been in the offseason in the lab working. So, and I just can't root for the Clippers, man. It's just against my nature. Even though they will probably have the best record in basketball, I just can't root for them.
I totally get it. Also, by the way, on purely a basketball basis, they've had a few pratfalls in the postseason with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So it is one of those things where I think a lot of us are expecting or just looking at them saying, like, you got to show me first. Like, I'm not giving you that out the gate because we've seen you guys fall short too many times. But the talent is definitely there.
You know, I'm really interested in watching New Orleans this year because I think B.I. is one of the best players in this game. I want to see how Zion goes to work. So that's going to be a really interesting team to watch also.
I agree. I just did a big feature story, cover story on Zion for our NBA preview issue at Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. I think that team's got all the potential in the world. I think Willie Green's a really good young head coach. That they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. You got another kind of sleeper or a team of intrigue out there?
In the whole league or just in the West?
Let's go east since the Pelicans are in the West.
I think, you know, they're going to be talking about Spider, and but I'm looking at Chicago. You know, I think Chicago's a little bit healthier. You know, they're going to learn how to play without Ball. And I'm a huge DeMar DeRozan fan. I think Chicago, because now they got a whole season to play together, I think Chicago's one of those teams that's going to, Either I was going back and forth with Chicago and New York.
Yeah.
So with Chicago.
I feel like the Bulls, everybody's kind of like, okay, that was a nice little run, and now we're kind of pushing them to the side because the Cavs are surging and the Hawks got DeJounte Murray, and we're kind of expecting all these teams to leapfrog them, which I'm sure the Bulls are very aware of. So
yes.
They'll probably want to push back against that. Rob, this has been great. Appreciate you coming back. Catch him on Spectrum Sportsnet. I think I got that right. in LA, and of course on League Pass we can catch all the regional studio shows, and opening night Tuesday night, ring night, Lakers at Warriors, catch that on TNT. Rob's old team against the Golden State Draymonds. Rob, this has been great, man. Thanks for coming
back. It
will
be the most watched game in a long time.
No question. All right. Thanks, my friend.
All right, brother. Have a great one.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Robert Ory. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.